Live from the red carpet and brought to you by Klondike Bars. What would you do for a Klondike bar? I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2 Talk. This is episode number 18, and we are recording on February 26th, 2011. And Allie, why don't we have theme music again yet?
Well, I couldn't decide what to wear for the podcast.
Couldn't you just check on your appearance tab?
But I have to change my outfit.
You didn't buy anything from Station Cash to wear during the podcast, did you?
Yes, I bought a whole new outfit just for you, Del.
I hope you used at least double Station Cash. Alrighty, now you said from episode number 17, we had a bit of a misspeak.
Yes. In the ninja interview, he was talking about the lore that takes us from Sentinel's Fate into Destiny of Veleus. Do you remember that?
I do.
Well, he talks about Ladazal showing up at the end of the prelude events with Alcabor and D'Artagnan. And then he talks about how we learn about the Swords of Destiny at the end of the Roanthir encounter. Well, I erroneously mentioned that he was referring to the footsteps of D'Artagnan's signature quest, when in fact, I believe it's actually the series that ends with the quest called Subordination Insubordination that leads you to Roanthir to kill him. My mistake. Chalk it up to Ninja's lore intimidation powers. Let's just say I was mezzed.
Did he throw you a guardian taunt?
Yes, I was taunted off my target.
All right, we had a few emails that have come in since our last recording.
Yes, we did.
So why don't you take the first one?
Well, the first one comes from a player who doesn't give us his player name, so let's just call him Bill. Bill writes, responding to, I guess, episode 16, when we the game, shall we play a game episode? Bill writes, I've played Cosmic Encounter since it came out. It's my favorite game ever, too. I was lucky enough to work in the game industry back in the 90s and actually worked for one of the many companies that had the Cosmic Encounter license. So I had access to some of the foreign versions of the game. I collected different editions of the game and, like you, still have the complete Eon version of the game. Awesome. I still have the Mayfair, Avalon Hill, and Fantasy Flight versions of the game. I gave away my West End games and Games Workshop editions. When I worked for TSR, I used to use Cosmic Encounter as inspiration for my work on Spellfire, and a number of the cards I wrote in that game were based on the Cosmic Encounter powers. You should point people to the www.cosmicencounter.com for the official online version of the game. Favorite powers, Schizoid, Seeker, and Terrorist. Anyway, great show. Keep up the good work, and don't forget to tip the butler. Well, I didn't even know there was an online version of the game, so thank you, Bill, for sending me that link, and I think we can include that with the show notes. I think we probably have a couple listeners who are also interested. And just for the record, my favorite power is the Reincarnator. So, Del, you did a little squeal at TSR.
I am a fanboy of TSR. We played Dungeons & Dragons Second Edition for hours on end, and we still do, not as often as we used to, but still do occasionally. And we had every book, everything they ever printed, we bought, and multiple copies of it. So certainly put a lot of money in Bill's pocket.
TSR also apparently did a little research here. They also made the game All My Children in the 80s, which I bought, apparently along with 149,999 other people.
Really? There was an All My Children role-playing game?
It was a game. I have it somewhere, probably in my basement, unless it made it into a garage sale. Yeah, isn't that funny?
Is Erica Kane in it?
Yes.
And no, I didn't Google that before the show.
You used to watch it, didn't you? So, we also had another comment about episode 16 on Facebook from, we'll just say, JP. JP posted on our wall. a little behind on the podcast, but Alicious Cosmic Encounters, dude, plus 500 to geek cred. P.S. Being a girl gamer that likes cosmic, hot, H-A-W-T.
Aw, yeah.
I thought that was awesome.
Girl on girl cosmic encounters.
Gotta love geek cred. It's hard to get, you know.
All right, our next email was from Zaldor on the Butcher Block server. And Zaldor writes, Mr. Delmon, sir. Let me interject. I already like this guy. To be honest, I haven't really been able to listen to many podcasts over the past few months. When I finally found some time, I decided I would start by catching up on old EQ Tuesday shows and noticed that you weren't on them anymore and haven't been there in a while. This made me rather sad. So I pooped over to the EQ2 forums and searched for your username to see if you were still around. And I found that you were on a new show. Still on episode 4, but I've got to say I'm really enjoying listening and hope that you guys keep up the great work. Thank you for your time, Zaldor from the Butcher Block server.
Let's just get one thing straight. He popped over to the EQ2 forums. Poop over. Thank you, Zaldor, for that lovely email. We have another note from our friend Sprouts on the Freeport server. To explain, when I started playing EQ2X, I had to select a character name, so I started at the top of my Ultima Online character list. Ulrich, my first character made, nope, taken. Okay, my second character made, Grimm, nope, taken. On to my third character, Sprouts. Ah, we have a winner. Basically, that is how I, being a male, started with a main that is female. Also in UO, the female characters had an advantage in armor. They could wear male and female armor, where a male could only wear male armor. I figured that wasn't the case in EQ2, but you never know. As for using her for the podcast emails, everyone seemed to be using their main's name, so I just followed suit. If it makes it less confusing, I could use Turk, who is the third character I created on EQ2, who is male. Now for a real discussion topic. As I'm imagining, the above may have derailed Dell, since there was a whole paradox of Dell hitting on a dude, but maybe he was in character, so then Dell the dwarf was hitting on a chick. Nah, that's still awkward. Sorry, real topic for sure this time. I have a level 30 provisioner, and I thought, hey, maybe I could make a little money off the food I make. I searched the broker, and I was shocked at how low people were selling provisioner food and drink. Level 29 items with bonuses were going for 1 or 2 gold for a stack of 20. Once I picked up my jaw, I thought, why the hell am I spending hours making stacks of food and drink for my characters? It's so inexpensive to buy. Why am I even bothering with a provisioner? Anyway, I know every server is different, and maybe the table turns at the higher levels, but I'm still bewildered why people would sell these items for so little. The time-to-profit ratio seems way off to me. Thanks again for a great podcast. Signing out, Sprouts, and her entourage known as the Alts. I hear you chuckling there, Dell.
Well,
are you crying?
No. Allie, my conundrum is, do I ignore the elephant in the middle of the room? And I say no. The Delmon has never been one to ignore anything. So, to Sprouts, I say hello. And yes, I am still wearing a bath towel. While the Delmon is very flattered that you see him in that way, the Delmon's water sprinkler for MNAG, while it is real and it is spectacular, it does not sprinkle that way. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So, Sprouts, I'm very sorry from the bottom of my heart. I'm very sorry about your misunderstanding. And I hate having to Dear John you during this podcast. But it is what it is. But I do hope, Sprouts, going forward, that you and I can be friends. Now to Sprouts' other question about making money while doing trade skilling.
Yes, making money while trade skilling.
Call me, Sprouts. Now, I believe, and this is my opinion, that there is no money to be made in trade skilling. I believe you can break even, but I do not believe you can really generate large amounts of profit because There are so many people who are trade skilling, and trade skilling is so easy that there are even more people trade skilling, that there is not a lot of room on the broker to sell your items without having to undercut everybody to the price of fuel. Assuming you harvest all on your own and you only charge slightly above what the fuel costs you, you're barely breaking even at that. You are breaking even. You're breaking slightly even. You're slightly ahead. But it's almost not worth it. So my opinion is, and I think a lot of people do this, they trade skill to supply themselves. If there is a opening in the market, they'll try to take advantage of it. But as soon as there is that opening, everybody else jumps into it. So it's my opinion that there isn't a lot of money to be made while trade skilling, that the amount of players versus the amount of need just don't pay out. Allie, what do you think?
Well, I kind of agree with that when it comes to the straightforward, the regular trade skill books. For the most part, the market is flooded with people, especially in the lower levels. The market's flooded with people leveling up. And they just throw their stuff on the broker for the cheapest amount because there's so much else on the broker already. There's kind of no point. You just want to get rid of it. I myself, when I'm leveling up trade skillers, I don't even sell it on the broker. I just sell it back to the NPC vendor just to get my fuel money back so I can continue buying fuels for the next tier. But I do think there's a market in some of the rarer books. The recipes that come from anything that's requires factioning, I believe there's a market for that stuff because there is an extra step you have to go to. You have to faction up in order to get the books. So it's not every single, say, for example, weaponsmith who can make those temporary adornments. It's only those weaponsmiths who have factioned up to get the books.
I believe you're right there, that as you move into, say, that next, for lack of better terms, tier of trade skilling, where the requirements are a little bit more, there is less competition, but there is still competition out there. So you're not making money hand over fist. You're just making money fist over hand.
Well, and also anything that requires a rare, like expert spells or some furniture items or whatever, those items you can't just churn through and make a whole ton of them and put them up on the broker. They're fewer and farther between, and also your sales are farther between. So it's a question of outlaying the time and then having it sit on the broker for a while and having the time between when you make it and the actual sale. It's either an investment of money or time, and I guess if you're just making stuff and you don't really care how long it takes to sell, you can put it on for whatever price you want. And probably eventually it will sell.
Agreed. And I think the way the game is set up today with guild halls and the trade skilling depots and most everybody being gilded, there is an opportunity to turn to a guildmate who may have leveled up and say, hey, I do have this rare. Can you make me this table or this Adept 3 spell or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you don't see people maybe going to the broker as their default methodology of acquiring this stuff. They're getting it in-house.
Right.
Where they're able to avoid those broker costs and whatever markup there is. Thus, people who are selling on the broker are even having a harder time because there's less people out there necessarily shopping. So the demand is less.
Well, and the other thing is when you're leveling up a trade skiller, I think that you know, you're not necessarily going to sell every single thing you make. You may sell an item that ends up being useful to somebody. Say, if you're provisioning, there's several types of food and drink. Okay, well, maybe the rest of them aren't that great, but it just so happens this one day, all the monks, you know, everybody's rolled a monk, and the monks want this type of food and drink. Or there's a whole bunch of people who just join and they want to level up really fast, so they just buy whatever off the broker. So maybe you'll sell some of the things at a given time, but you won't sell everything. If you leave the stuff up there long enough, you can sell it. But if you're churning through trade scaling, you're going to run out of room to put stuff. So it seems like you're not selling anything, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It is certainly a tricky space because the opportunity isn't always there, and when you're trying to hedge the market, it can be a challenge as well.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you again, Sprouts.
Yes, thank you, Sprouts.
And thanks for being a good sport with Dell and his bath towel.
Oh, yeah. Our next email is from Penge. And Penge writes, hello, first a word about pronunciation. Penge Finches. Penge rhymes with Stonehenge, Finch, S.
So you already messed it up.
Fair enough. Okay, loving the podcast. Wonderful stuff, you two. In-game stores. As I've said before, I play Lotro now instead of EQ2, which is free to play with in-game store, although I am a lifetime subscription player. Various fluff items in here, but also stat totems, crafting ingredients, ports to various areas of the game. Unfortunately, I don't think there's going to remain a separation in EQ2 for long. This seems to be the way all MMOs are going. A tale of caution. On Lotro, we have seasonal festivals, spring, summer, etc. On the fall festival, which has a Halloween theme, there was a little instance, the Haunted Burrow, which was very neat, gave various fluff rewards for quests, but there was an in-game festival mount, the Skeletal Horse, which was a very rare drop. Every 24 hours, players could loot a chest which would give you cosmetic fluff items or a rare chance of the horse. People queued up daily, watching their timer count down and taking their pull from the chest. The festival ended and a very few people rode around on their horse, which admittedly was just cosmetic, no change to gameplay, but was very cool. Then a week after the festival, guess what? The horse appeared for a limited time on the store. Cosmetic, yes, but totally killing the feeling of luck and ownership for the peeps who got the drop. It's coming your way, guys. Frowny face. Couldn't believe, Dell. I heard you say it's not all about you, Allie. You really are softening like ice cream in the sun. About the iPod phone external apps. Yes, the crafting thing would have to be secure to stop people hacking and crafting with rares that they didn't have in-game. But what about a training dummy game to get your slash crush pierce up? Anyhow, keep it up. Cheers from Penge of Nagafin, now of Laurelin. So, Allie, what do you think about that? What do you think about a training dummy game for your iPhone?
I think it's kind of a neat idea. I don't have an iPhone, as I've said, or a smartphone. I don't know. I could see that. Like, you know, if you're using a crushing weapon and you switch to a slashing weapon, you haven't gotten your skill up. Yeah, maybe that's kind of a good opportunity for something on there. It is a free app. You could say that it's available to everyone, even though maybe not necessarily everybody has that type of a phone. But I don't know. I guess it's a neat idea. I don't like things that would give a distinct advantage to certain people over others, but this doesn't seem like a super advantage. It's something you could do in the guild hall with a training dummy. If you were in game, you could just go AFK and do it. So why not?
Yeah, I agree. We have this sort of functionality in game where you can bring up the training dummy in the hall and set yourself to auto attack and go away and make yourself a sandwich and get all your skill ups and come back later. I think it would be a lot of fun if you had something like that you could sit there and not necessarily do the same thing, just set yourself on auto attack on your smartphone while you're riding the train and you know it's just hacking and slashing away at a training dummy in your pocket. But if it was some type of interactive game where you could make moves or counteract things, so it was a little bit of a, what do I call it, like a little mini game, like an Angry Birds-like game or something where you had to do something interactive with it. So it's EQ2 themed hack and slash. Yeah, okay. That might be a little bit of fun. Something to do again while you're waiting for the bus.
Yeah.
And if you got skill up points for it, sure, why not? Because I don't see that it's that offsetting in game because we already kind of have a set it and forget it way of doing it today.
Yeah.
That doesn't unbalance the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think it would be a lot of fun. And, you know, maybe they could reward little things like they do with Fortune League or something like that as well. Other cosmetic things, if you made an HO on your phone app type game or something that was hard to do, or or, you know, single shotted the dummy with a counter move or something like that. I don't know. Other little tokens that they could give along the way. I think that would be a good idea.
What about his comment about you softening like ice cream in the sun? I don't remember what that was referring to.
I don't exactly remember it either, but I know I said that. We were talking about
something. It had something to do with being okay with, I think you were mushing down on the whole station cache thing or something.
Yeah, probably. I'm certainly not as much, say, flailing my arms and kicking kittens as I was initially about it. And he makes a really interesting point here about this skeletal mount from Lotro being rare and everybody excited about getting it. So they're signing into the game, they're playing, they're doing whatever they need to do, and there's a chance to get it. And those people who did get lucky enough to get it are riding around in our Kinos Harbor, for example, or something like that, mm-hmm. to show it all off. Then a couple of days later, when it pops up on the store, did you feel cheapened by that a little bit?
Well, if I had been one of the few to get lucky, maybe, but I don't know. I guess getting lucky to me isn't an accomplishment. Maybe the trying, maybe the putting in the time and effort to sort of camp the whatever. I don't know. I kind of go back and forth. I guess it depends on the situation, the specific situation. I don't certainly begrudge anyone having stuff. Having an equal shot at stuff in the game. I guess I'm not a fan of buying stuff because at some point you have to draw the line morally, kind of, or not morally. What's the word I'm looking for? You sort of have to draw the line at some point between playing a game and just buying stuff. You know, at what point do you stop selling?
Well, I think that's the station cash versus earning it yourself type of discussion. But I think what Penge here is referring to is a one-of-a-time or limited item that not everybody had access to. And certain either people through, in this case, luck, but in other cases it could have been through skill, maybe killing an epic or something like that, they got a limited-time reward. Does it cheapen that limited-time reward if 2 weeks later, it pops up in the store?
Well, it kind of does because there's no indicator to show that I got it through a different means other than using my wallet. So in a way, yes, it does. It's basically looks like everybody bought it.
Right. So how does the company, who's driven by profits and money, say, well, gee, we had this limited thing, but now we know that we can make money off of it, so let's start selling it. It's no longer limited edition when you start, quote-unquote, mass producing it through your store.
Right.
And I think that's a challenge for players to figure out, you know, I want it to be limited edition because I want to have it and I want to show it off. But the company's looking at it going, hey, we can drive a lot of profits if we sell this thing and everybody gets a shot at it. And then we're making money. We cheapened what we had, but we're still making money.
Yeah. This is a whole big, long conversation because the making money thing, that's a whole nother conversation.
So let's do this. Let's file that as a good topic for a discussion for another day.
I think that's a good idea. Our next email is from Typotin. I think I'm saying that right. Hello, I'm Typotin. And he gives us a pronunciation of Butcher Block. I just started listening to your talk show. Good job, guys. I've been hearing a lot about EQ2X. Well, if it wasn't for EQ2X, I wouldn't be writing this letter. I revisited Noreth through EQ2X after 5 years. The game has changed so much, I decided to give it another chance and bought the game again, now on a live server and having a ball. You guys have helped so much just by talking in general about the game, but I also have a lot of history. I played the original EQ from beta until EQ2 came out, and then about 6 months into EQ2, I changed MMOs. The only thing I really hate since I've been back is this neutral town crap. Well, you can go into this town, but no one will talk to you or trade with you. I feel if you're going to do something, do it and go all the way with it. Open vendors and menders and banks. But it just seemed kind of half-hearted to me, even though I know they did it so folks could move around faster. Not here to fuss or complain. Again, guys, great job. Enjoy your show. Lots of good karma. Typo. P.S. Has EQ2 tried progression servers yet? I really enjoyed it when they did it with EQ back in the day. So, Del, can you answer that question?
Well, we haven't had in EverQuest 2 a progression server yet, and I think it's still a little early for it, where we've just got Velia, so there's a lot of new stuff going on, so players are enjoying that content right now. EverQuest has the advantage of a 5-year and 7 or 8 expansion head start on EverQuest 2, so there is a lot of content that you could progress through again and unlock along the way. So I've heard talk about, there might be something like a progression server at some point, but I don't know. I don't think we need it right now. I think players who are enjoying the game are enjoying the live service that we have, or the EQ2X or the PvP servers and whatnot. So I don't necessarily know if a progression server fits in today. I think we have enough already to do and keep us busy and have fun with. Somewhere down the road, I think a progression server could fit in.
Can you explain for listeners who aren't familiar with what a progression server is?
Oh, sure, sure. A progression server is kind of set up in a way that content is unlocked in an orderly fashion. So they might launch a new server, and on that server would only be up to level 50 and those original zones from the game at launch time. And then through player activity, maybe completing certain quests, so many players reaching level 50, somebody killing Darathar or something like that, it would unlock the next content. So then all of a sudden, DOF would become available and players could get up to level 60, and they could go through that. And then maybe when the God King was killed, that would unlock Kingdom of Sky or something like that. So through player action, content is unlocked to them and that they hadn't had already access to prior to that. Gameplay would kind of still be as it is today. We wouldn't go back to, say, pre-game update 13 rules and the way things operated and all that, or old UIs. The rules that we have today would just be relayed on top of original content, and then you would move forward again.
Sounds really neat.
It was very exciting in EQ1 to watch it. I think, though, a little bit that there came to be a small group of players who were determined to be the unlockers, and they did everything in their powers to unlock things as quickly as they could. And it didn't open it up for a lot of players to do that. It just seemed to be the small group of motivated players who wanted to do all that, which is okay. But again, I think in EQ2, we're still so new and young and fresh that a progression server is a little bit of ways off for us, I think.
Alrighty, and we did have one last little note, which we received at 3:00 in the morning on the evening before the expansion from Belle on the Everfrost server. She just sends us a little happy expansion eve. Feels like Christmas, which I really enjoyed because I felt the same way.
Yes, and Christmas for us finally arrived, and yes, we now have Destiny of Velius.
Yes, we certainly do.
So I think that was our plan for kind of the rest of this podcast, is to talk a little bit about what we've been doing in Velius and what our first impressions and first takes are of what we've been seeing and what we've been doing thus far.
Yep.
So, Allie, what have you been up to in Velius?
Well, it's only been 5 days.
So your max AAs and you've beaten all the raid content.
No. Actually, I only have 4 days worth of notes because today I didn't take any notes. But no, I'm not max AA. I think I've earned 2 AAs so far. 3 maybe. I think I got my 3rd last night. I came into this expansion with a mindset that I decided to veer from what I did last expansion. What I did last expansion was to just devour all the quests solo, and I bubbled myself off from everybody and was doing my own thing until I was done. And when I was done, then I allowed myself to do instances and things like that. Well, I missed a lot of the expansion by doing that. In fact, there's still, I still have yet to really, I think I've been to Outer Vaults one time and I don't really remember it because it was such a blur, but I still have quests in there. I don't really feel like I explored enough of the heroic content in Sentinel's Fate. I never did get the times to access. I've only been there a handful of times to the times two. So, you know, this time I decided I am going to, the quest will always be there. I'm going to put those on the shelf for now and do them when there's downtime. Just poke away at them a little bit. There's no rush to get those done. I'm not in competition since we can't really see where we stand against each other on EQ2 players anymore. I'm not really in competition anymore. I've decided I want to explore the instances and the heroic content, the public quests, the raids, everything as much as possible from as early as possible. Because I think one of the most fun things to do in an expansion is to learn the encounters and figure them out on your own without looking it up somewhere. So I started doing that. Very first day, the very first thing I did was hit the Shadow Corridors, the Tower of Frozen Shadow, first instance there, with a group. It was so much fun.
My first few days, I would say, were almost the kind of complete opposite of that. I did what I have always done, and what you chose not to do this time, was I started out doing all the solo quests, reading all the dialogue, and doing all that first to kind of get that story build up for why I want to go into the heroics later. So more so from a gameplay perspective, I took it from a story perspective. I land in Sinking Sands, and then I jump down to Velius, and I started going right from there, right from the docks, and started going forward right away with exactly what I saw right in front of me. So for me, I think that's kind of interesting in that I've been doing a lot of the quests. I have about, I think, 3, maybe 4, but don't quote me. I haven't been really keeping track. 3, maybe 4 AAs thus far. And I did all the quests through the Othmer camp, through the Knoll camp, and now I am just starting to venture into Thurgadin a little bit and out there with the Rhyme a little bit as well. So I've just started getting into that area. So I think it's interesting that both of us took kind of two different paths to consuming the Velius content. You going kind of towards the heroic right away, and I going the solo route kind of right away.
Yeah, and I mean, not to say that I'm not doing quests. I am. I have been doing quests. I've decided not to go look anything up. I've decided to just do what appears before me. And I figure I'll just go back and get stuff later that I miss, if anything. And I'm not doing things in a, any sort of list order or anything like that. I'm just going where the wind blows me, basically. If somebody throws me an invite to do a public quest, I'm going to stop what I'm doing and go do the public quest. That's kind of what I've been doing. I actually have worked through the Othmer camp. I'm not sure if I got them all. I don't know. They sent me over to Thurgadin, so I'm kind of over there by the Khaldane now. Ran into some gnome pirates and did some stuff for them. So I'm just kind of going where the wind blows me. It's fun.
Interesting. Again, I'm doing almost the opposite of that. I have been following the storylines tab in the journal.
Ah, yes.
And making sure that I complete each of the storylines that they have listed. They have listed them out in a kind of content progression orientation. So mm-hmm. You start out with the Othmers, then it takes you to the Knolls, and then it takes you to the Thurgadin docks, and then into the Rhyme folk. So I've been following that and making sure that I've completed all the ones along the way, and any side ones that where I see feathers that I'll go over and check. But if it starts to smell like it's off the story path, I kind of leave it alone and say, okay, I'll come back to that later, because I do want to stick to the story that the dev team kind of presented to me. So, again, I think that's kind of interesting that, again, we're taking it two different ways. You with the, as you say, as the wind blows me kind of right. Direction, and me going, okay, give me spreadsheets and give me lists. I need to know what's exactly next on my list of things to do.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this. You said you were using the Storylines tab.
Yes.
I haven't opened it. since the expansion launched. Is there more to the story that you get through this, the storylines tab that is not revealed in the quests? Which, by the way, I am reading this time. So I'm trying to get the lore. It's because we don't want another Ninja Mez Fest again.
I would say through the storylines tabs, no, I haven't seen that the more of the story is revealed. I think it just keeps you, for lack of better terms here, on the straight and narrow of the story. But I don't think there's anything more to it. But there is one thing I want to say about reading of the quest text, and I think it's great that you brought that up. I noticed this time, at least in the Othmir, now I don't know if it goes forward, but the traditional way of doing quests is you just click the top line, right? And you click, 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 and you go, go, go. Sometimes the person talking to you will give you the top option, which is the one-word answer, yes or no. But if you click on the bottom one, he'll say something like, I'll tell you a little bit more about that if you wanted to know. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of click, click, click if you want on the top. But if you take the bottom one, it's not necessarily the no answer. It is the more answer.
Sometimes.
Right. I'm not going to say that they're all like that. But I did notice that. So I had been being real careful this time when I was reading to always read both options, not just always read the top option, which was always the yes option. Sometimes the second option was more, not no, but more.
Yeah, I noticed that this morning, as a matter of fact, there was a quest, and the second option, the first option sounded rude. It was a rude remark, and I wouldn't have said that. So I looked at the second one, which was more of a polite answer. So I chose that one, and I think I ended up at the same place, and I don't know that it would affect anything, but it was interesting to see that it wasn't just, tell me now, stop talking to me, just give me the answer, or I don't have time for you right now, goodbye.
Let me ask you that, because I believe you're correct there. You always get to the same result.
I think so. I should say most of the time. I've already seen one incident where not choosing the correct answer leaves you with the res button in your face. So
okay, I've seen a few of those, right? Okay. But in general, when I'm playing, and let me ask you, do you do the same? I always seem to take the, like you said, polite answer, the friendly, sure, I'll help you, not just give me the task and I'll go do it.
Yeah, I try.
Or where's my money?
Because in case some reason to not be rude, or reason to be rude. Maybe you're talking to a race that doesn't like these niceties. Just in case there is some lore reason or some faction reason to answer one way over another.
I think you're correct. Years ago, when you were talking to Nagafin during the original signature line back then, if you said the wrong thing, he one-shotted you instantly.
Well, there is something else here.
Oh, okay.
Expansion.
Oh, spoiler alert. All right, don't tell me.
I'm not going to tell you, but it didn't happen to me.
Okay.
It happened to someone. And I laugh my ass off.
What other first impressions have you had thus far?
Well, so many. Pick a topic and I'll tell you what I think.
Let's start with artwork.
Oh, I think the artwork is amazing. Amazing. As a matter of fact, I took a bunch of screenshots. I was playing around with my settings. And there are, those three new visual changes they made, or options, I should say, that they put in the game.
Yes.
I tried playing with those. One of them is the distance, the depth perception, I guess. Is that what it's called?
Something like that. I have to be honest, I don't remember technically what the term was, but yes.
Okay. Well, in any case, when you check the box, it allows you to see more like things are focused closer up and a little bit out of focus farther away. I happen to be in the area outside of the back of Thurgadin, or the back, I don't know what area, Storm Gorge maybe, wherever you see there's two little encampments over on the side with big cannons and there's some sneaky rhyme guys around the edge.
Yes, that sounds like Storm Gorge.
Okay, so in that area I was sort of up in the mountains looking back toward Thurgadin, and I noticed these two statues, big dwarf statues. So cool. And when I see those things, I screenshot. Well, I had my settings on at the time, and I was blown away by the the visuals and the art, because I wasn't used to seeing things focused up close and blurry farther away. So it looked so much more real and so much more immersive, if that makes sense. So I'm standing there screenshotting. I had to turn my windows off, you know, F10 and screenshot and move around. And I thankfully didn't fall off a cliff because of the new way the mounts work, or walking around on hills and things is different now. But I could totally see myself back in the day falling off a cliff taking screenshots.
I like very much so the look and feel of this. I was really concerned because I have had recently a tough time dealing with like Everfrost or Miracles zones because of the snow and the ice. I'm not sure if it's the lighting, my monitor, the new PC, or what it is. So I was very apprehensive about, oh no, more ice. I'm not going to be able to see everything. It's going to be a wash of white and light bouncing off of white. But they did a really nice job of putting just enough, I think, blue into the snow and the ice that it's not just a blank sheet of white paper with people running around on it. So I think that looks really good. The ice looks phenomenal. I was running around on some frozen ice the other day with water underneath it, and I was looking down. I'm like, wow, that really does look like frozen water with water underneath it.
Yeah.
I then probably fell through the ice, which I didn't much care for. And if there is one thing that is driving me bonkers about the geometry thus far, is I have fallen off the edge of the ice out there in the Great Divide so many times. And then I got to swim all over creation trying to find some ice that I can go up on.
Well, that'll teach you a lesson.
It has. I am being more careful about that because I have fallen in so many places. And I'm like, oh, crud.
It's easier to catch yourself, though, because you can see yourself tilting over kind of like a little bit before you fall. So you can right yourself again. Have you not found that?
I have. But I do think it's really cool, too, the few times when I haven't fallen under the ice. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to swim up, and I'm swimming underneath the ice, and I'm banging against the ice. I'm like, wow, this must really what it'd be like if I was trapped under ice.
Yeah, I get a panic kind of feeling because that underwater sensation of being trapped under the ice. I get a little freaked out by that. I want to know where the opening in the ice is. So
it's not as bad when you're a priest and you have enduring breath and you can have it on all the time now. If you didn't have it.
Well, I have my fishbone earring that I still use. So it's not as if I'm going to drown. I just get a panic feeling because it's so realistic. Don't you get that? Like when you jump from a really high place, do you get the little like sphincter factor happening?
I wouldn't say sphincter factor. I don't know if this sounds worse. I get the throat, you know, the clogging of my throat.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't think I'm the only one that does this. When I'm jumping, I'm leaning forward in my chair as if that's willing my
cat right.
go further or lean to the left.
Yes.
I do it much like in the car when I'm a passenger. I'm always hitting the brake.
Right.
I'm not driving, and my pushing on the floor isn't going to help anything here, but it's instinctive. So when I'm jumping or falling in game, I am definitely leaning in my chair trying to guide my character in the direction I want him to go. Don't think it helps, but.
Yeah, I jumped off of the top of at the Thurgodon docks, I guess, where that little elevator is. I didn't feel like waiting, so I just jumped. And boy, that sphincter factor kicked in. And I sometimes have to close my eyes because it's so realistic that I feel my body reacts as if I'm falling.
Speaking of that exact area, there is one thing that I was kind of disappointed in. I wasn't paying attention and I ran up to that elevator and I didn't realize the elevator was up.
Okay.
And that elevator is like a giant cheese grate that comes down.
Yes.
I think it should have killed me.
Want to die over there? I got a perfect place for you to die. All you have to do is run by the torch outside of right next to the elevator. Just run by it as if you're jumping off, but run next to it. If you get close enough, it'll kill you.
I did see something about that on the forums earlier.
Oh, it's real. It's real.
I think it's a defect. I think they're going to fix it because fire shouldn't be killing us. I mean, hell, we swim in lava, right? And that doesn't kill us.
I wrote it down. Let me find it in my notes here. It was kind of humorous. Hold on. Here we go. No, that's not it. That's a different thing that killed me. I'm sorry. This doesn't make for a very good podcast, but wait. Hold on. Let me find it in my notes. Man, this is such a mess. I should have really made notes that were more organized. Oh, here we go. The text says, when you die, it says, Invis Cube with fire damage result has killed you.
Sounds like a developer line that they left in by accident.
Well, it totally killed me. It was like 20,000 damage. And I was dead before I hit the ground. I was just a corpse floating in the air and falling. Man, did that wake me up, though.
One other thing that I really liked, too, is that the shinies now seem to have this olive glow or tint to them.
They look brown to me. You know what they look like? They look like the reverse of shiny. I was thinking we could call them darkies.
Maybe that's it. I have to tell you, back when New Halas launched, there was a quest where you had to go around and pick things up off the ground, and they were glowy white things. I actually had to put infravision on so I could turn my screen purple, shades of purple, so that I could see these things on the ground. I still had a dickens of a time finding them. So I'm very happy to see that shinies are not white anymore with all this snow around us, that they're these, as you say now, darkies.
Well, we should dullies, maybe.
Dullies, maybe.
Because to me, it looks like, you know how you see a negative, like film negative? It looks like the negative version of a shiny.
Well, that's a good description of it, too, and maybe that's really what they're doing. But I have to say it's very helpful because I don't think I'd see half of these white shinies on the ground just running around out in the snow. I'd run right over them and not even see them at all. So I'm pleased that they're at least some form of different color.
Well, one thing that, going back to the beginning, getting to Velius from Sinking Sands.
Yes.
I was so looking forward to riding the turtle. But I was really sad to find out that Lotazol doesn't move. I thought there would be some, you know, swimming around involved, like in Finding Nemo. I wanted to be like, whoa. But then I was like, whoa.
That is kind of disappointing. You're right that we don't get to actually ride him. It's just a zone. That would have been cool because he is just a boat, right, effectively?
Well, yeah. I mean, but he swims out. I mean, I don't know. I was all excited.
He's a big-ass turtle.
A big-ass turtle.
He is.
You know, that's not very... That's not a right way to talk about the messenger.
I'm sorry. It's mostly expansion weight. I'm sure he'll lose it.
Have you done any of the public quests?
I ran by one. I did not get involved again because it sounds silly, but it wasn't on my storyline. So as much as I'm interested in them, I have kind of avoided them.
Oh, it's so much fun. I had so much fun. I did the Ring War the first day, February 22nd, launch day. I jumped in, I saw someone shouting in zone that it was 8 minutes, and I'm like, okay, how do I get there? I didn't even know there was a griffin, so I started swimming, and I couldn't get up onto the ice, so I evac'd, and then went back and found the griffin, took the griffin over there, and like racing to get over there, and I caught it probably maybe in the middle somewhere. But there were only like 6 or 7 people there, so it was kind of fun. We didn't group or anything. You know, we did it, and everybody got a little something, and it gave me an achievement. I also did the other one. I logged in one day, and a guildmate sent me a tell and said that it would be, or said in guild chat or something, 14 minutes until the next one, which I didn't know how to get there. So I just grouped with him and call a veteran over there. We did that, and it was fun, and loot was had.
Is it fat loot?
You know, I gotta be honest, I'm a little confused by the loot, but I think it'll become the norm pretty soon. It'll just become normal. There are options. Do you want me to tell you about this, or is that too detailed and boring?
No, go ahead.
Well, it's basically you get different things, and there are websites that have explanation of what the different levels of loot are based on the encounter difficulty. You get a bag of money, and you get a crate of some sort that you can open, essentially, and select from 3 or 4 or 5 items, depending on what level your reward is. And in the ones that I got, which was sort of a lower end loot, there were the choices were AA, like a thing that gives you AA, basically. Something you can transmute to get, you know, powders or fragments or whatever.
Okay.
Or a basically like a ring or something like that that you can get favor with your deity. So okay. The first thing I picked was the AA one. And then the next thing I picked was, I just picked one of each the three different times I did the public quests. So it's kind of confusing because you don't see everything in your physical inventory. You do get the first time you do one of the public quests in a day, you get one of those little faction tokens, but that goes into your currency tab. So unless you look at your chat log to see that you received that, or look in your currency tab, you're not going to know you got that.
Okay.
Some sort of a jewel of some sort that you can, I think, turn in for faction with one of the different faction places. I haven't done any of that yet. So, and the AA, I have no idea how much AA it was. I just took it the first time, and the coin, I had no idea how much that was either, but I think they changed that already to show you exactly how much coin you get.
Okay. I certainly have fallen victim to that where is my loot scenario.
Yeah.
Like when it's fallen into my currency tab or my mount tab or something like that. I'm like, where'd that go? And I'm looking at my bags. I'm like, hey, dum-dum, it was a mount. It'll be on the mount tab.
So, yeah, I thought the public quests were fun. I really get a kick out of random live things going on with people I've never met before. And it's kind of neat because you see, you know, maybe you'll see the same people that you were in a public quest with in town. And you kind of want to say, hey, I know you. Hi. You know, that part's kind of cool. I like meeting new people.
And I think, too, you know, to go a little further on that is because we've just recently merged with Nagina, about a month ago now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people may have been on hiatus or not as playing as much. Now that Velius is live, I mean, I saw the other day we were up as high as Velius 10, 11, and 12, I think, the other night. Yeah. I've heard rumors of up to 14.
Yep.
We're seeing a lot more folks. They're coming back to the game, and they're from other servers, so we never had seen these people or their guild tags before. I'm seeing so many new guild tags on Unrest that I had just never seen before.
Yeah, and the other thing, I'm sorry not to derail, but I was just thinking as you were talking, the other thing I like about meeting people in these public quests is that it's like meeting people without any strings attached. I think that's one of the benefits of the public quests. You can group up if you want to. You don't have to. But you get to interact with people without any strings. You know, it's not like joining a pug for an instance, and you're pretty much tied to them until you finish the instance or until your power goes out or whatever, or you accidentally hit the reset button on your computer. You know what I mean? If you don't enjoy it, you can walk away and there's no harm, no foul.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting you say that, because so often too, when it comes to pugging, at least for myself, and I'm not sure if other folks have this apprehension, there's times where I feel like I'm constantly being judged. If I'm not doing 101 DPS, I better be doing 102. And if I go to 99, these people are going to start, you know, bitching and complaining and posting on sites how much I stink. So I feel like I'm always being judged. I'm always being watched. So I have to be on my A-plus triple game all the time because, God forbid, something go wrong. I am immediately blacklisted for something.
Yeah.
Now, here in these public quests, well, I'm not being judged so much. If I walk away or I suck, the other people aren't going to know so much because they're kind of doing their own thing.
Right, and they also aren't going to lose out because of your sucking.
Correct.
You know, like it's a group effort and basically it's how far the group gets. And it's not as if one person can hold everybody back from progressing this public quest. The no strings attached thing is really, really appealing, I think, for me anyway, because, you know, sometimes, you know, if you start an instance, maybe it's really late, you're committed now. It's almost like being married to this group for the duration of this instance. But if something happens, now you have to say, well, I gotta go. Can you replace me? You have to find a replacement. Whereas with the public quest, you can just jump in and jump out and nobody will be any of the worse for wear.
say, how many times have we been in a group in where there are single slot roles, like a tank or maybe a healer or a crowd control, where that person is in such a limelight that any mistake or screw up that they make is amplified?
Yeah.
Not to say that DPSing is easy, but sometimes DPSing can blend into a group because there might be multiples of them.
Yeah.
But when you have those single defining roles, one mistake by that one person can just spin you out of control, and then it's all downhill and it's all their fault, right?
Right.
I'll tell you, as a healer, sometimes that puts a little undue pressure on me, as much as sometimes I enjoy that pressure at times and I look at it as an opportunity to shine. There are nights when I'm like, you know, I'm half watching a rerun of Family Guy on TV and I'm not really paying attention, you know, and you get the group killed. Now I suck and I'm forever black labeled.
Is that why you let me die? Was you watching Family Guy?
Maybe it was Seinfeld with you. I really don't remember. Or maybe I was rocking out to some Debbie Gibson on YouTube. I don't really remember.
But yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, like, I guess for a healer specifically, some zones require more than one healer if one of the healers isn't a specific type of healer. Say, for example, like a chain healer. You know, sometimes you can have a chain healer be the solo healer, mm-hmm. or you can have a Templar be the solo healer. But some zones can't do that. So, like, maybe you're with a group that, well, I was just with a Defiler last night and he solo healed it. What's wrong with you? Why can't you solo heal it?
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of that, too, is the makeup of the group. When that solo Defiler was doing it, maybe you had the lead tank from the most cutting-edge guild on your server who's decked out in, you know, the greatest tier gear out there. Their avoidance is through the roof. Their mitigation is through the roof.
Right.
So, you know, they could have probably done the zone without a healer.
Right.
Now you've got a guy who's showing up in Master Crafted and trying to do, say, the Palace of Rudin or something, and is getting pwned by every trash mob out there.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the public quests first take, I really enjoy them because of the mechanics of that element. But I also enjoy the sort of spontaneity feeling of it, sort of like it's a live thing going on in the world that I'm having an impact on as a player.
Mm-hmm.
And these random people I don't know are working together with me to accomplish this. Oh, and Del, guess what?
What?
There's shinies.
During public quests?
Yeah.
All right, well, we have to cancel this recording right now so I can go start harvesting shinies during public quests.
Well, after you kill the final mob, I didn't realize there were shinies until the third time I did it, and I was with my guildmates, and the one guy hadn't done them before, and the other guy was explaining it on voice, and I'm like, and he's like, yeah, now you go run around and collect the shinies. I'm like, wait, shinies? Where? Yeah, so I got three shinies the third time out. The first two times, I didn't even know about them. So, but by the way, if you're grouped, you have to share them with your group because it's just like a loot pop-up. So if you're not grouped, if you grab the shiny, you get it.
Oh. All right.
So now you're all over it, huh?
Now I'm dropping group the minute that thing's over so I can start harvesting.
Oh, cheating.
It's not cheating. It's a modified form of gameplay.
But if someone else grabs the shiny that you couldn't harvest fast enough,
I'm writing their name in the notebook and I'm never grouped with them again.
No. If you're grouped with them, you get a shot at it. Whereas if you were too slow and not grouped, you wouldn't get a shot.
Then I just start bitching about them and shout and bad naming.
Oh, you're so full of crap.
That's how I roll.
Can I talk a little bit about my first day?
Sure.
Besides the stuff we just talked about?
Absolutely.
The first thing I noticed when I logged in, well, I shouldn't say the very first thing I noticed. After a little while, I noticed my achievements tab had some new achievements in it that came in on launch day. And I looked to find out what they were. And I found some of them, but I didn't find others. So I thought I would mention this because I wanted to find out if you had the same experience. So there were several achievements that I hadn't seen before. One is Signature Grandmaster. That's a new achievement, apparently. So you have to complete 50 signature quests to get that. I think that's kind of cool because I already have it done. It was already done before I logged in. So I found that. There's also another one called Undivided Attention to Detail, which I found under the Trade Skills tab. And it says complete 50 trade skill quests in the Great Divide, which I was awarded. But that was before I did anything, before I even went over there. I definitely haven't done any trade skilling. I have certainly not done any trade skilling in the Great Divide, so I don't know why I got that. That was weird. But at least I found it. Then I found another one called Narathian Air under the General tab, which I guess you have to obtain a flying mount. But I definitely haven't done that either. So I don't know why I got that one. That's weird. Do you have these achievements?
I believe I was also awarded them, and I guess we can chalk them up to some form of bug that made it into live where whatever the check for it was isn't correct, so we were awarded them without having completed them.
That's too bad. Anyway, in any case, I found those, but then there were two others that I couldn't find anywhere. One is called Let's Go Antiquing, which gave me 20 achievement points. And then another one's called Links to the Past, which I'm imagining these to be maybe some kind of heritage, some kind of access maybe, just by the names. But I have no idea what those are. I can't find them in my achievements tab anywhere.
Yeah, that's surprising. I'm not sure where those come from either.
Anyway, just thought I'd mention those. Kind of bizarre.
One other thing that I have been really kind of pleased with myself about during this expansion thus far is I have not had to resort to XAM or the wiki or any other outside resources to complete any of the quests. The little ROIs, the little blue dots or the blue shaded areas for all the quests have kind of indicated where to go. Some of them were kind of obvious when they say head southwest and kill the turtles or kill the badgers that are over there. Okay, that's pretty obvious. But sometimes when you're looking for that one shiny or one thing underwater that you need to click on or harvest, in the Great Divide, it's obviously a large area. You don't know where you're going. So I think these ROIs, as much as I dislike them because I think they're too much handholding, I found them much better than just going to XAM and looking for the waypoint and then plugging that in-game and running in that direction anyway. So they're both good and bad. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about them. I like having them, but then I don't like so much of the handholding. But certainly when looking for one little book underwater, there's a tremendous amount of area. You'd never find it without swimming all over and spending hours upon hours scouring the seafloor. And then you just get frustrated and you go over and you'd look it up on the wiki and you'd come back with the waypoint. So I think they kind of take out that middleman, which is good. Have you had any feelings about them?
Yeah, actually, you know, I forgot about the little, what I don't even know what ROI stands for. To me, that's return on investment.
I think it's region of interest.
Okay, all right. Yeah, sure. That makes sense. You know, there are a couple things. I haven't looked anything up either, mostly because I've been reading the quest text. They do sort of tell you north of here, northwest, or in this general vicinity, and they point you in the right direction. And it most of the time will say something in your journal about around where to look. But you generally get more information from the dialogue, more detail. So I've been using that. And then when I get close, then I use the blue dots or whatever, if I need to. But I did run into one situation where I looked something up. And I know how you feel about sort of feeling kind of proud of the fact that you don't look things up. I've been restraining myself from looking things up because I don't want to ruin it. I don't even want to read the forums because I don't want to ruin it. Because a lot of my enjoyment of the game is about seeing things for the first time and experiencing them for the first time. And sometimes I don't like group situations where people are familiar with the zone and they're, okay, all you have to do is go over here and you click this, you stand here and do that. And then we go in and out at this point, you know, joust to here, done and done. I'm like, well, I didn't even get to learn that for myself. You know, I sort of feel cheated a little bit. So that's one of the reasons why I like doing these encounters early on because nobody knows anything yet. We're all kind of in the same boat. So that part's really fun. Apparently, I started the Kul'Dane Insignia Ring Heritage Quest, but I don't really... It was an accident.
Okay.
Some reason I took... I was sent over in a region to get an update for a quest. I was following my quest journal, and I took the Griffin over to a particular area where there was a blue dot on my map. So I went over there to where the blue dot was, and then I got distracted because somebody invited me to the public quest. And I figured, well, I'll just try and get my update while we're waiting around for the public quest. So I'm clicking and whatever. And eventually I ended up getting started on the Heritage Quest. And I'm like, well, what was the quest that drew me over here? And I'm looking. I couldn't find it. So I have no idea what that quest was that I was following. And I kind of want to know what made me go over there. Who sent me over there? So I've got a note to my husband to, when he gets to that point, tell me what quest sent him there so that I can have some sort of, you know, closure on that. It's bothering me. But anyway, sorry, I distracted myself again. So I did have to go, look something up. Because I got stuck on this one part that's telling me, you know, to go look in a library. Like, well, how many libraries are in the game? There's like 500 libraries in the game. I'm going to go look at every library. No, I don't want to look at every library. Let me just go look this one up. And I kind of felt dirty doing it, but I did.
There's been one thing that I've been a little bit uncomfortable with, I guess, while playing thus far. And I certainly hope this isn't too much of a spoiler for some folks. When we start out, we're working for the Othmers, and then we start working for this band of gnolls, and then we head over to Thurgan, we start working for the Kul'Dane, and then somehow we start working for the Rhyme. Now, apparently, as far as I can tell, the Rhyme and the Kul'Dane are kind of at odds a little bit. I don't feel very heroic when one minute I'm doing something for dwarves and killing Rhyme, and then 10 minutes later, I'm doing another quest for the Rhyme, and I'm killing dwarves. We seem to be going back and forth, so these camps, these quest hub areas, seem to be very disjointed at times, whereas one minute we're doing one thing, and then the next minute we're doing the complete opposite. We're losing faction, of course, while we're doing it, but we're being both good and evil at the same time. Now, not to go down a long story about whether or not, you know, good versus evil, that sort of stuff. But at times I don't feel heroic when I'm killing good guys. And I remember the same thing back in Runes of Kunark day when we were working for the Ixar and we were working for slavers and capturing escaped slaves of frogs or killing frogs that had escaped from them. So I'm a little disappointed in that sometimes while playing, I'm losing that feeling of being the hero when I'm killing good guys.
Do you ever feel like, can you ever just like think about it as you're working towards the greater good? Because I think maybe these quests aren't, it's not as if there is a good with a capital G or an evil with a capital E necessarily. It's just the point of view of whatever NPC gave you that quest.
Yeah, and I guess that's my challenge. That's why I say it's not good versus evil, right? There's the grays in between. But sometimes I feel less like a hero when I'm killing Kul'Dane dwarves.
Even if you are researching for the greater good, you know, for the greater good,
so
the
longer,
bigger picture. Like maybe in this particular instance, you are killing... Oh, I haven't gotten to the Rhyme part yet, but maybe you're killing dwarves because you're trying to get friendly with the Rhyme so that you can learn something that's going to better the whole of Norath in the big picture. Isn't there a bigger picture?
Certainly there is a bigger picture. And I'm probably sounding all goofy for talking like this, but to me, a good guy would find a way where he didn't have to kill that Kul'Dane messenger. He would have parlayed or used charisma or something.
I'm picturing Dudley Do-Right with the giant jaw.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I just, you know, it just doesn't feel heroic to me. Hey, little Coldain Messenger dude, I know you're just a pile of ones and zeros, but I do like you. You are a good guy. But here, let me kill you. But don't worry, you didn't die in vain. I'm now going to go infiltrate the Rhyme. I don't know. It just feels blah to me. Maybe I shouldn't be putting real-life values on Coldain Messengers who are just little guys running around on a server somewhere Tron-style.
So is there no way to get through this progression without doing both?
Well, you certainly, I think the option could be, well, you don't have to do all the quests, Del. Right.
Yeah, you don't have to.
And that's an option. But the storyline kind of, again, not the storyline, but the storyline of Velius kind of forces you through that. You are going back and forth through all these things. I guess it sounds a little silly, but to me, I just don't feel like a hero when I'm killing good guys or
really
working for the bad people.
It's interesting to me that you say you don't feel like a hero. One of my first notes from the day it launched was I did pick up a bunch of quests. I worked on the early quests over the course of 2 days in between instances, but I found that actually I felt like it was more heroic in this expansion. I felt certainly more like a hero in this expansion, helping Ladazal and the Othmir, than I did in the last expansion, where I just felt like a gopher peon. Go fetch me this XYZ and get out of my sight, you wood elf.
I certainly agree with that. I think that the text of these quests that we're doing, even though they're still gopher and kill 10 rats type quests, but you're doing it for a reason, and I think you're right. For some reason, in Velius, I feel like I know why I'm doing it. In Sentinel's Fate, I think the NPCs, they didn't tell us why. They just said, you know, go fetch me this. Well, why did I go fetch it for you? You're not important. You don't need to know that. So I didn't feel heroic when I was doing them. I certainly do feel more heroic now doing quests for the Othmers because I think they're a little bit more talkative. They tell you why and what you're doing and how to rip off Kung Fu Panda movies.
Oh, but, stop.
All right.
It's not ripping off. It's an homage. I okay. thought it was cute. I liked it. Don't do that. So negative. I liked it.
Fair enough.
That's an homage.
Okay. Homaging Kung Fu Panda. So I think in Velius, yes, the NPCs spend more time telling you why you're being a hero as opposed to just go and do this for me. Maybe it's because the erudites in a role play storyline, dude, look down to you as a wood elf or a dwarf. You're not one of them. The Othmer, they're a little bit more inviting, so they're a little bit more talkative and they chat you up more during the NPC quest text.
Well, and one of the other things I noticed is the way you get the quests, I think, is more interesting. There were some mechanics in there that I don't remember seeing before. There was one time I got interrupted by an Othmer running by. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Go see Nipik. And I was like, whoa, this is cool.
That's true.
And I immediately felt like I had to stop what I was doing and go see Nipik right away.
We don't have NPCs talking to us, only like responding to us.
Well, this time there was. That was
right,
way cool.
Right. Absolutely. I was surprised by that as well. I think we've really seen that before.
No, I love that. I love that. Yeah, did that take you by surprise? Were you kind of like, ooh, neat?
Well, first I'm like, who the hell's talking to me, right? Because I thought it was a player. Like, looking at that name, I'm going, wait a minute, I know that name. So, yes, and it helped involve that that immersion we talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you felt like, oh, wait a minute, this stuff's going on around me here. I'm part of this world. I'm just not going over and hailing, and he's talking to me. He's coming out to seek me out and to engage me and draw me into the story as opposed to me going to them. So I did like it. It caught me off guard. Like I said, I immediately did a who-all to see who that was because I'm like, I don't know this person.
That is hilarious. I saw him run up to me and then start talking, and I saw the little chat bubble, and I was like, oh, how cool is that? Because I'm in the middle of talking to a different NPC, and it got interrupted when he came running up. So I thought that was really, really neat. Really, really neat. And I immediately, of course, wanted to go, you know, follow his direction to go hurry up and see Nipik. So I thought that was neat. I like that.
I did like that as well. So what else do we have on our first impressions of Velius?
Well, I pretty much talked about most of my first impressions, but I did have three small things that I wanted to mention.
Okay.
One of them is on the first day, there was, or sorry, first or second day, there was a bug with the cryomantic armor. Did you know about this?
Oh, I knew about it. Oh, yeah.
Well, I was in an instance with a dark elf female who was wearing the cryomantic armor. She had no clothes on except for boots and a thong.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. That is all.
well worth the use of station cash.
Well, it wasn't my station cash, but I took many screenshots. Another thing I did want to mention is that the... Do you know about the Sign of the Alesmith?
Yes, that was a loot card that could port you to a bar.
Wow, I'm impressed with your knowledge, Del.
Thank you.
That was completely out of nowhere, and you just pull out Elwyn loot card out of thin air. I'm very impressed. But it's not an Are You Smarter week. So, yeah, my Sign of the Alesmith doesn't work on the bartenders in Thurgadin. And there is no shortage of bartenders in Thurgadin, let me tell you.
Well, it is a cold place, and they do like to stay warm.
Yeah, and there are many bartenders, and none of them will offer to bind me there. I'm very, very sad. So I'm stuck with my Loping Plains bartender. So I'm wondering if that is actually deliberate or if it's just not was an oversight.
I would say at first an oversight because, wow, I'm, like you said, I'm impressed I even remembered that.
Yeah.
I can imagine all the things that go into making an expansion and easily forgetting, doy, we got to tag all the bartenders for a loot card from the original LON set.
Yeah.
My guess, oversight, I don't see how being able to port to Thurgadin would be an exploit unless there's something in there that I haven't seen yet that would be kind of, oh, we don't want people to get there that quickly.
Well, my thought was maybe they're going to try to sell something on station cash, but.
I would say oversight for now.
Yeah, let's go with oversight. The third thing I actually wanted to ask you, maybe you know the answer to this, is Nipik blind?
I don't think so.
I thought maybe he has no pupils like the other Othmir. So I thought maybe there was some reason why he was blind. Some lore that I'm not...
I'm not aware that he had vision issues.
Well, he looks different than the other Othmir. He has no pupils.
Well, he was a very unique model. I don't think we've seen that in any of the other Othmir, have we? He was the only one that looked like he looked.
Yeah, he was very cute and old. Poor little guy, working so hard for 200 years. Well, anyway, that's all I had.
Should we turn our attention to this week's Alley Angle?
Sure.
Okay. So, Alley, are you ready for this week's Alley Angle Destiny of Elias type question?
Yes, I believe I am.
Okay, because the question has nothing to do with Destiny of Elias.
I know.
I don't know why I said that. I will speak to my intern about that later.
Your intern who writes the Alley Angle questions?
Yeah, but I just read copy. I don't write this.
Okay.
Alley, as you have said in the past, you are a fan of doing quests and doing all the quests. So you have a good background in that part of the game. So as we begin our venture into Velius, we see lots of new quests to do. But looking back, what are three quests that were really painful for you when you did them?
Well, I would actually call these annoying quests. And actually, this conversation came up with a guildmate of mine. And I've been instructed to mention his name on the podcast. It's Gimpy Cat. One of my favorite people. Anyway, we were doing something and in one of the zones. And one of these really annoying quests came up. So I came up with my list of three. My number three one is called Retrieving Owlbear Eggs in Neck Forest. It's where you have to summon and possess a clockwork owlbear when you get close to a female owlbear. So when you're in that form, you basically use a bunch of different abilities to sort of replicate the owlbear mating ritual.
All right.
Dancing and cooing or whatever it is you have to do to get her to lay an egg. It's pretty simple if you just go in the order 1, 2, 3, 4. But if you happen to not press the right buttons or Bristlebane forbid, you press the 5 button, which is to dismiss the pet. You end up failing or just simply losing the illusion. So, and I've done this quest on a bunch of different alts, and every single time I forget that just keep it simple, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I end up pulling my hair out until I get frustrated enough to go look it up on Zam or something. And then I do the, you know, the smack the forehead, you know, and I finally finish it like, I forgot. It's just 1, 2, 3, 4. So really annoying.
All right. Yes, owlbear lovemaking shouldn't be any more complicated than 1, 2, 3, 4.
There are many steps to owlbear lovemaking. There's dancing and cooing and singing and all sorts of things happening.
Can't say as I've ever made the beast with two backs with an owlbear, so...
Too many feathers involved for you?
I like the feathers, yes.
Oh, boy.
Number two
most annoying quest is Enduring Friendship. This is the Barbarian Dwarf Love Fest quest in Guk Lore Corridors.
Yes, I remember this.
Look, more lovemaking. What's happening here with this? So this quest has you helping a ghostly dwarf find his barbarian cohort. So you have to find a bunch of different things in the zone. You have to go back and talk to the dwarf. Then you got to find the barbarian. You got to kill some stuff, go back to the barbarian, then back to the dwarf. Okay, fine. Up to this point, it's normal. But now you have to escort the dwarf to where the barbarian is located. And this dwarf walks really friggin' slow. This, by the way, is the quest that Gimpy Cat was forced to say, this is the most annoying quest ever. You are laughing. You're thinking about owlbear mating. Dwarves and barbarians? Wishing Sprouts was a barbarian?
No!
Anyway, along the way, this dwarf who walks really friggin' slow will stop, and you have to tell him which direction to go. No wonder he can't find his friend. The guy keeps getting lost. I guess I would, too, if I were a ghost and had no eyes. Anyway, if anybody in the group hails him, forget about it. He's going to stop moving, and it takes him forever to get going again. So assuming that you give him the right directions, eventually he'll reunite with his friend. But at this point, half the group will have fallen asleep. So this quest is extremely annoying today. But imagine back in the day when it launched, when TSO came out, this quest was even more annoying because only one person in the group could complete the quest per zone. And I've heard that if everybody hailed the guy at the same time, you could all get the update. But usually some jackass runs back to the dwarf and hails him first, blocking everybody from the quest. Unfortunately, the first time, that was me. I was the jackass. My only excuse is that I ran the zone really early on in the expansion and didn't know anything about the limitations of this. So, second most annoying quest ever.
Okay, and your number one?
You gotta give it up. What are you laughing so hard about in the background?
I am not laughing at all. I swear to God, I am not.
Okay. Thought I heard you snickering. Really?
Really? No snickers.
Oh. Okay. The number one of Allie's most annoying quests ever is from, it's really throwback. It's called The Three Keys, The Second Key. This is a book quest in the Thundering Steps. There were three books, The Three Keys, The First Key, The Second Key, and The Third Key. Well, I remember The Second Key very well because I was on it for seemingly an eternity. This was basically, this quest is a book that has a bunch of missing pages that you have to find by killing specific mobs. Each page asks you to kill 10 of a particular mob. And then you have to examine the book to get the next page to see what it wants you to kill next. And it follows a pattern of 3 pages of a particular mob. You know, 3 pages of mob A, then 3 pages of mob B, then 3 pages of mob C. So that's 30 of each mob. Because you go 10, 10, 10, and then the next mob, 10, 10, 10. Okay, so after each set of 10, you have to pause and read the book in order to progress the quest. Do you remember these?
I do remember these, yes.
So these quests have since been easy moded, if they're in fact in the game. I'm pretty sure they're still in the game, but they've been easy moded. So essentially the mobs they give you to kill are just generic, you know, badgers, wolves, antelopes. You still have to do the 10 and, you know, of each mob, or 30 rather. It's just basically tedious at this point, but it's no longer in the annoying category like it was when I did it.
Okay.
The original quests basically were so specific on the type of mobs. They were like these ultra rare spawn mobs. You know, you couldn't just go out and find these specific types of badgers. You had to make them. You had to find the placeholders, which were a specific type of wolf. So if you kill these specific type of wolf, these specific type of badgers will spawn. And they only spawn, you know, it's like, say, a group of three, only two of them are the right type of badger or the right type of wolf. Once you've killed 30, which, mind you, 10 at a time, and then turning the page, God forbid there's any group together, if you kill the 10th one and there's still one more left, you better hurry up and look at your book and turn through every page before you kill the next one. So it actually goes towards your quest, because otherwise you're going to have to respawn the stupid thing. So once you finally killed 30 badgers of this specific type of badgers, now you find out what the next type of mob is. And guess what? It's the wolf that you've just been killing, that specific type of wolf you've just been killing in order to spawn the badgers that were placeholders.
Yes, there were many book quests that were kind of like this as well. Maybe not as bad as the Three Keys series, but a lot of the books had that type of setup when the game first launched. They were difficult to do.
Yeah, the Three Keys, the second key.
So, in review, your three most annoying quests were?
Retrieving owlbear eggs, which I guess that's more just Allie being stupid, but it's kind of annoying.
Number two?
Enduring friendship. Moderately annoying.
And number one?
Old school, the three keys, the second key. That's like full-on hate meter, 100% annoying.
And yes, I was snickering about a dwarf barbarian owlbear orgy.
A dwarf and a barbarian in an owlbear nest feathered bed.
Oh, yeah. All right, so before we get any more off topic with that, let's say thank you for everyone who listened to the podcast this time around. We hope you enjoyed it. We also want to say thank you to this week's corporate sponsor, Klondike Bars, part of the Good Humor Breyers family of frozen treats. Allie, what would you do for a Klondike bar?
It might involve dwarves and owlbears.
If you have any suggestions, comments, or feedback on any of the things that we've been talking about here today, or on your first impressions of the Destiny of Velia expansion, you can send an email to me. So I'm delmon@eq2talk.com.
And I'm Allie at eq2talk.com.
And if you want to catch us in-game, you can do so as well. So for me, that's eq2.unrest.delmon, D-E-L-L-M-O-N.
And I'm at eq2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And don't forget, you can also check out EQ2Talk over on Facebook by doing a search for EQ2Talk. And we do appreciate all the folks who have liked us. And you can keep up on what we're doing in between each broadcast by being a fan of the show. You can also now find us in iTunes, if you haven't already, by just searching for EQ2Talk there. So thank you, everyone. Hope to see you out in Velius. And say goodnight, Allie.
Good night, Allie.
So I guess I'm just not used to have something sticking in my face.
You're not.
Oh. All right.
It's funnier when you're smiling.
And the whole world smiles with me.
That's right. I know what I'd do for a Klondike bar. Happy Delmon!